Hello, and welcome to episode 1 of Superhero Speak, The Beginning. In this episode, John Ben and I sit down to discuss Man of Steel. We take a look at it and compare it to the Donnerverse. You know, we had a lot of fun recording this episode, and we really hope you enjoy it. Here we go.
Yes, exactly. And we're rolling, guys.
Excellent. Yeah, you're the one that's going to get all the female email and, you know, what does he look like?
Yes.
Hello, ladies.
Yes.
Yes, we'll tell everyone you look like a hobbit. Oh, wait, no, we don't want to say that.
That would be accurate. No, we don't want that. Yeah.
Then again, depending on the people that listen to this, that might be a turn-on, so.
Could be. Could be.
Yeah.
But Frodo or Baggin?
Yeah. Have you been to Comic-Con?
No, that is a lifelong, you know, goal, dream of mine. I'd love to be there.
Someday.
Yes. Someday. Yes. I've been to many a con, but not that one. Not the golden goose of cons.
I've always been told that, like, San Diego is one that you go to once to experience, but if you want to have fun at a con, you go to Dragon Con in Atlanta.
Mm. Oh, well, yeah. Atlanta, you know, it's Georgia.
There is that.
Well, peaches that. Or something. I don't know.
So we've already offended a city. That's a good start.
Yes.
Sweet.
The best way to start a podcast. Offend some people.
Perhaps an entire state. So
so I guess we could start with what we were talking about yesterday with the new Superman trailer.
Yeah, the Man of Steel trailer. That looks pretty pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that I wasn't excited about the movie at first. Mm-hmm. This trailer's got me more excited for it.
Yeah.
Though I do worry that it's not, I don't know, it's not going to be, it's going to be a complete departure from the Donnerverse, right?
It is, and I think that that's one of those things that they've, well, all of us as fans have wrestled with is because they... Yeah, you know, we look fondly back on those movies as being these great, you know, iconic superhero movies. But in truth, I mean, I have watched the first Superman again recently with my kids, and they enjoyed it quite a bit. But it doesn't quite stand up as well as we might think it does. You know,
no, and that's true. I mean, I think one of the biggest criticisms has always been there's not enough action in those movies. He's not punching people.
But is that the Donner? Is that were you watching the original or the Donner cut?
Well, I have not actually seen the Donner cut specifically.
Oh,
because the
Donner cut had a hell of a lot more action in it, and well, considering it was 78, the battle over New York City was by standards of today, it was kind of really lame. But back in 78, that was it. I mean, I mean, it was pretty nice, and there was none of the stupid stuff like. You know, ice cream flying into a man's face from super breath. I mean, all
what is wrong with ice cream?
It was, yeah, I know.
Ice cream makes everything better.
Everybody all that stuff was added after they kicked Donner out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and the slapstick and the throwing of his logo, which wraps everything because, he can have
weird,
any superpower he wants.
Right. Of course. Why? You know, it's the Superman movie. He can have any power they can think of at the time.
But if you think about
which has happened in the comics as well.
Right, exactly.
He has evolved over time.
Right, that was at the time in the comics when his powers were getting ridiculous. Mm-hmm. He could do almost anything. Like he was just destroying universes by clapping his hands and all this crazy stuff. And that's when they did the whole Infinite Crisis was to reboot much of the DC universe, but to reboot Superman because it was like, okay, he's gotten way too powerful. We've got to tone him back a little bit more to what his original power level was.
You couldn't write for him. I mean, he was super smart. He could figure out how to place the moon back in its exact orbit.
Yes.
I mean, okay. How do you fight that? Well, okay, there's kryptonite everywhere. I mean, that's the only thing. And then, of course, in the Superman Returns movie, we can lift an island of kryptonite now. Hey.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah. So.
It really hurt, though.
Yeah, so. Yes.
Yes.
Killed
him.
It was a very painful process.
Kind of. Yes. Kind of, for a little while.
Right.
Well, that's one of the things that I also kind of found inconsistent in Superman Returns was that he was weakened by the kryptonite, but yet they still kind of stick needles in him. You know, but where in every other incarnation, when he's weakened by kryptonite,
dark energy field protecting his cells, so nothing can penetrate.
Mm. His skin can be cut usually when he's weakened. So
yeah,
that was a little far fetched.
Perhaps.
But back onto the new one. I mean, Yeah, I did like, it's funny because we were also talking about how in the, one of the things they keep pointing out is that he says his S stands for hope, or his symbol right. stands for hope. It's not an S.
Right, and I don't know if that fits any of the canon of what it's and actually, said to have stood for.
I did do some research, and not too long ago in the comics, they did, that wasn't one of the storylines.
Yeah.
So it is kind of canon in the comic books okay. now. Yeah.
I know the artists have taken it in different directions. Like at one point it was supposed to stand for his the house of crest. His family, right. his family yeah. crest. At one point, I think there was a storyline where it actually stood for his sort of career cast. Like it was a symbol of science. When they had the Kryptonian planet that was tiny that they right. enlarged in synchronous order, geosynchronous orbit. I can speak. with Earth. Calder? Was that what it was called? Something like that?
Not Calder.
Something like that, yeah. And that, I think at that point it arose that was the, they had made that the crest of the science guild, so to speak. Right. So he arguably should have been in the science cast, but I think sort of went outside of that.
Right. And also there was a storyline, I think, could be, 60s, 70s, where his parents created, his father came up with the symbol, mm-hmm. and it was based on a Native American symbol, because there was a storyline where, a bunch of Kents get poisoned, and the Native Americans help them out. And they have the symbol that shows what they use to cure them, and it's mm-hmm. that's a symbol of a snake, but it's a symbol for protection because the snake right. is protecting them. Right. So his father thought, "Ooh, mm-hmm. I put the symbol on to help protect my son." Mm-hmm. You know,
talk about tying into Greek mythology. I mean, yeah. Right back to the catechism.
Yeah. Smallville played a lot with the symbology
too. It did, and it did tie it into some of the tribal stuff when they had the underground tunnel with his. I guess there was a cache or something.
Right, there was these catacombs or something that had some Kryptonian artifacts. Right, as well as
but a lot
things.
Of that was tying back to saying that Kryptonians had kept visiting
had
the
visited
Earth.
Previously, yeah. And in a lot of the early stuff in Smallville, they had replaced the S with a figure eight type
yes.
shape within that
the
symbol.
Sideways infinity symbol. Inside.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I think a lot of that was done by Smallville.
Sure.
They keep away from costume. Concept.
Exactly, exactly. Even though they sort of went towards it in the very first episode.
Oh, you mean
when
big
he had
S
the big S painted on his chest.
Yeah. Oh, we're never going to the costume, the but bully. here's something to make you cry. You know?
Right.
It only took him 10 years.
Clark as a scarecrow.
Ten years. Well, yeah, and of course they copped out because, of course, they had Superman Returns coming out at that time, and they couldn't have... I forget what's his name, the main character. They couldn't have that actor wear the costume on screen. So
Tom
that
Welling.
So the final 15 minutes of the series ending was just glimpses of the costume or his face or the costume
his
face. Or, through a bunch of crystal, which kind of looked like Superman, but you couldn't see the face.
Yeah.
So you never actually got to see him in the costume.
Yeah, I never saw Tom Welling standing and looking Supermanish in the costume.
Yeah. The closest we got was the very end shot with him ripping the shirt open and he had the shirt on underneath.
Yeah. But that was dumb because the Superman Returns was coming out and Warner Brothers didn't want to mix the two, which actually I think Tom Welling would have made a better Superman.
Well,
I mean, he looked the part.
Well,
was,
the original
the original
plan from everything I've read was they were going to end Smallville after 5 seasons and go into movies.
Right, have it roll into whatever movie they were producing at the time and carry it through.
And Welling was like, no, I'm not going to put the costume on. I don't want to be Superman. And
so that's a shame.
I've never met Brandon Routh, but I met people that know him, mm-hmm. Celebrity Authentics. Mm-hmm. I was talking to the guys from there. And they were like, they had that conversation with Brandon Routh, and he's like, yeah, I was basically told the only reason you're getting this job is Welling doesn't want it.
That's the thing is, a lot of people pan Superman Returns. I thought that despite any of the criticisms, it was a valid continuation of the Donner series. I mean, it was confusing if you were trying to follow it that way and say, well, it's a sequel to those, but only to 1 and 2 and not then disavowing 3 and 4. I can see how that sort of threw people off. But
which 3 and 4 don't exist.
I completely understand. Although I like Richard Pryor, that wasn't his best role.
Yeah.
I thought Superman Returns was enjoyable. I thought it was a completely watchable movie.
Right.
And I thought that Kevin Spacey, I thought, did a great job as Lex Luthor.
Right.
In that universe.
In that universe, exactly.
As the version of Lex Luthor.
You know, the same, which is the same, you know, why can't I think of his name now? Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
You know, always angling for real estate kind of attitude that he had. You know, this was his plan. He was going to, if he couldn't get land, why not build land?
Make
the land he wants.
Makes sense.
Yeah, but I've seen fan fiction that was better than that storyline. I mean, even if the characters, you know, actually played well, I mean, Kevin Spacey channeled Gene Hackman.
Yes, I think he channeled the role well. I'm not saying it was written well, but he played it well.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think everyone in that movie, for the most part, played it well.
Well, Lois
Lane
was a little lame.
He could have pulled it off.
Lois Lane, I mean, what's her name?
Damn,
I can't remember.
I can't think of her
Bosworth.
Kate Bosworth,
right. She's a gorgeous woman, but you know, she just did not have the, you know, the coming into a room and having everybody turn around going,
she didn't
oh
have
crap.
The gumption. Yeah.
Yeah.
She didn't have that Scarlett O'Hara feel that, like, she owned the room when she walked into it. The way
But it may have been the
original, you know, who played her in the
Margot Kidder,
you know, had that, embodied that well.
And it might have been the writing. Because everybody was melancholy.
A lot of that was Margot Kidder's personality that she brought to the role, where it's like she owned the situation. She owned. They're like, I'm in charge when I walk in.
But that's been canon since then.
Yeah, Lois Lane has always been a strong character.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's what made her and Clark work well together, because Clark wasn't. Clark was always the bumbling, you know, soft-spoken,
right,
you know, one who Lois had to have tag along with her on these assignments.
And even Superman was always, I mean, this may have been the writing over the years and the comic books and the series and everything, but Superman was always conflicted and should I do this and where's the line that for using my powers? And Lois Lane was always there to shore him up and go, look, you know, take out the garbage, do what you need to do, you know? Yeah,
right.
And who's playing Lois in Man of Steel?
Amy Adams.
Amy Adams.
Now that.
Which
would
I
be
like
good.
Amy Adams.
Yes.
Hopefully, I'm sure there are people who are going to say that they don't like her in that role, mostly women, but we'll see how it goes.
I think she's going to do good.
I think she will do a good job at it.
Yeah.
She's an interesting pick based on her past roles. It's, you know, but.
But she
seem to have a strong personality.
She's got, fire.
You know who did play the role well, I think, is the girl from Smallville, I think, played that role well.
Oh, yeah.
I think she had the right personality set for it.
Yeah, I can't think of her name either.
Yeah. If only there was some way for us to look up this information and have it accessible to us.
Yeah, something like, I don't know, IMDb app on my phone.
Right.
Which, you know, I have right
are
here.
Are they promoting this?
They are now. Thank you, IMDb.
So,
but going back to the new movie, though, if you look at the new trailer, it does not look like he's leaving Krypton because it blew up.
It looks like
there's some kind of civil war going on.
There definitely seems to be a shift in that in the premise as to why he left Krypton, which makes you wonder what the state of Krypton is. I'm sure to some extent that might get revealed in the movie. Who knows? But whether Krypton actually gets destroyed or not is up in the air as far as we know.
Well, they destroyed Vulcan, so... wait, they didn't differently.
There was a scene that was cut from Superman Returns, which was he returned when he actually returned to Krypton, and they kind of showed, like, it didn't blow up. It was still there. It was just a dead planet.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're going to go that angle. Does
perhaps
Zod
some
like
sort
just
of...
wipe out all the life on the planet, but it's still there?
Right.
You
but
know,
then there was still a scene in the trailer with him and his henchmen sitting there in shackles, basically, and you know, so they must have been fed to the the zone.
Yeah, that's true.
So
I mean,
gotta have the Phantom Zone.
It's possible. Oh, well, it's possible the way they wrote it out is a little bit different. A chronology change, because in the original movies, you know, Zod and them were sent off into the Phantom Zone prior to the events of Kal-El being, you know, sent out because the planet was breaking up.
Right.
It seems like in the context of this movie, they might be swapping the order of those events. That Kal-El is sent out for his own protection prior to that, and you see scenes of Zod, you know,
yelling, "I will find him."
Exactly. And we may still see the destruction of Krypton after that, in the course of events, in the process of things after he gets put into the Phantom Zone or whatever he does. Maybe he doesn't go to the Phantom Zone at all. Maybe he ends up escaping on his own ship.
Yeah, I guess we'll see what they do with the canon on that. I don't mind them messing with canon a bit if it makes it better, but if they're messing with it just to say, hey, look, this is new, we can draw more people in,
yeah,
when most of them are going to see a very well done movie on here's what happens, and then they want to see action. They want to see Superman punching things and,
right,
you know, getting his ass kicked and then punching things again. And,
right.
Yeah, it's
more action than just like a slow motion bullet hitting Superman's eye.
Yeah,
and bouncing off,
which was cool if it was followed by him punching the bullets or something. Yes. You know? But seriously, you know, but everything that I've read online says that anybody who's seen the unfinished product so far has said that this thing has more action than like all the other Superman movies combined.
Yeah,
so that'd be nice.
Yeah,
you know.
But with the canon thing, just my own personal interpretation, and you know, if they throw it out the window, hopefully they come up with a better explanation. I've kind of always thought the reason, because if you think about it, like, you know, Kal-El gets sent to Earth,
mm-hmm,
and then grows up, and it's years later, the nuclear bomb blows up, breaks them out of the crystal from the Phantom Zone, and they come to Earth, and they're the same age as when they were put in there. So you kind of like assume like time moves differently.
Right, it's some sort of stasis.
Yeah. Some sort of stasis that they're in there forever. So that explains why they didn't age. So mm-hmm, hopefully they do something like that in the new movie. Not just like, oh, you know, they come and find him on Earth, but they didn't age and he's now 30 years older.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that struck me though with the new trailer is it seemed like, so the name of the new movie is Man of Steel.
Right.
And they had that scene towards the end of the trailer where Lois Lane is chatting with Superman in that interrogation room.
Right.
And, like, she had made the suggestion as to what the S could stand for.
She was going.
But there was, like, this static noise. It seems like they're avoiding the name. And I don't know if that's just a trick they're going for in the trailer or if there is actually some reason that they may avoid trying, like,
that might,
letting him be called Superman in the movie at all.
Yeah, that might be just be the trailer, though, because it looked like that was a cut. Like, she was about to say it, and then they cut, and you hear static, and he says, excuse me,
like,
but...
Well, he, like, made it look like he was clearing his throat or something when that static happened.
No, I'm
almost
hoping
as if he was trying to cover it up.
Right. Well, it's always been canon that Lois Lane names him.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Yeah. But I just was wondering if there was potentially some sort of reason, licensing wise or otherwise, that that Warner Brothers or DC was trying to avoid having him be called Superman, which would seem really odd to me.
Yeah. But, no, I think it might also be, again, when they make these movies, there always seems to be, okay, we want to separate ourselves from the old ones.
Yeah.
Right? So the easiest way for us to do that is not call it Superman, right? Call it Man of Steel.
Right.
You know, but I can't imagine them not calling Superman in the movie, and maybe they'll leave it for the end.
But the reboot of Batman was called Batman Begins, so they didn't really avoid it there.
And that was Donner as well, so.
Yeah, I mean Nolan.
Nolan, sorry. Damn it. Donner, I've got Donner in the brain because we were talking about it yesterday, and it just, you know, and that one scene that was deleted from the original cut.
Oh, yes, the gauntlet.
The gauntlet.
Yeah. Yeah, so, for anyone listening to this, if you've never seen the gauntlet scene from the original Superman movie, look it up on YouTube. It's the one scene that when you watch it, it's like, yeah, this guy's Superman, which every version I've ever seen doesn't include it. You know, it's mm-hmm. he gets shot at, he gets put on fire, he gets frozen, and he survives all of it, and then breaks into Lex Luthor's lair. Where in the cuts, all the cuts I've seen, he just goes right into Lex Luthor's lair.
Now, so, me being old and have and remember seeing it in the movie theater in '78. I remember that scene. I remember seeing that scene. And I told you that there were other movies that had scenes that were deleted like that. And I remembered last night, finally, the one that really bugged the hell out of me. And it was Empire Strikes Back. There was a scene on Hoth where the creature that originally captured Luke, a bunch of those actually broke. Yeah, it actually broke into the Rebel base. And okay. There was one chasing C-3PO and R2-D2. I remember that, seeing that.
In the theater?
It was in the theater.
Really?
Well,
I've seen that as a cut scene.
Yeah, I don't...
Since then, I've seen like some of... Because there are a bunch of cut scenes that didn't make it into the movie. And I recall seeing that recently as a cut scene from that. But I've never seen a cut of the movie with that in it.
See, now, again, I am. I'm old.
Granted, I saw that in the theater, too. And I don't remember seeing it in the theater because I was... What year was that?
That was also 78?
79?
79?
It would probably be 79.
Yeah. So I was like 3 or 4.
So, but then again, I saw it. It was a double feature with Battle Beyond the Stars in a drive-in theater.
Nice.
So.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, Star Wars had a lot of scenes cut out, like the Jabba the Hutt scene.
Right, in the beginning of the first one. Right, yeah, because they didn't have a design worked out for Jabba. Yes. When they did, there was a guy standing in that spot in some sort of costume that they CG'd over for the reboot.
Right, which is, like, it's so funny because I had the novelization of the movie when I was a mm-hmm. kid, and I remember reading it and reading that
And that scene was in the novel?
In the novel, and I watched the movie, and I'm like, what? This is weird. This scene's not
but
in there.
But
everything else matched up, and then... But then it's funny, now that I'm older and when I saw the reboot, you know, or the special editions and they put it back in, it's like, the scene doesn't really work.
Well, that's because they took the exposition from that scene and put it in with hand shooting Greedo. So, you know, everything he said was redundant.
It wasn't necessary. They shot both scenes. They went with the one with Greedo instead of the one with Jabba in the original movie, but it just...
I don't know. I guess it wasn't necessary. Like the characterization of Jabba, like he doesn't do his dirty work. He sends out bounty hunters to
do it.
Makes
perfect sense.
And why would he show
being
up?
Being a giant slug creature, I would imagine he wouldn't want to go out and have to pay these guys visits personally if he could avoid it.
Wait, are you saying you are a giant slug creature? Wait a minute.
Him being a giant slug creature.
Nice.
Sorry.
Again, ladies, send your email to... No. But yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to see. I can't wait to see it. But I'm hoping that this doesn't go down the route that the Batman movies did. And maybe if this one does well, they might do a Justice League movie,
the two latest rumors around that are, obviously Bale has said he will come back as Batman to do a Justice League movie.
Oh, he finally did say he would. Okay.
Yeah. And then the second part of that, this is just pure rumor, is that there is a teaser at the end of Man of Steel towards a Justice League movie.
Now that would be interesting. Mm.
Yeah.
Was it Amanda Waller walking up or something?
Well, you know, again, that was just it's just a rumor, but at the same time, I kind of hope they don't do it, because then it's like, well, you're just copying Marvel, and you know, do your own thing.
Would they? Bring what's his name back? Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Robin.
No Robin. I don't think we need a Robin.
No Robin than Justice League.
Well, and Levitt's too old.
What about the Wonder Twins?
Robin has to be a kid for it to work. It's funny because it's like, it's one of the things they've never gotten in the movies. It's like, and I guess it's because they're afraid to show a 10-year-old kid like kicking the crap out of people. But look at Hit Girl.
Yeah, I thought she did a pretty damn good job at it.
Yeah, and it worked in that movie, so it's like, well, why
the
can't...
The sequel to that's coming out soon, too.
Yeah, and even, you know, I mean, it wasn't a great movie, but Phantom Menace, there was a young kid riding those speeders around and using the Force.
I can't believe you invoked the Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Wow. But I'm just saying, like, a kid, I think a kid on film can work, and it's like... Yeah. I don't know why Warner Brothers has avoided it for so long. You know, is it not heroic?
They have bad writers. Well, seriously, I mean, you know, like I said, I have seen better fanfic, you know, for some of these characters than they ever get with these writers coming out.
Oh, yeah.
And Donner, like, go back to Donner. He cared about the character. He wanted to see a big Superman battle like every other real fan did.
Right.
And they wound up kicking him out because the movie was too dark.
But you have that. I mean, you have to have people that are fans of the material being the ones making the movies. I think Josh Whedon proved that. Right?
Well, yeah, that's, you know,
it's
right.
Like,
he's the ultimate fanboy taking over a franchise. You know, what more could we ask for, really?
Less
and,
plot
and
holes.
And J.J. Abrams is ostensibly doing the same with Star Wars, and we'll see how that works out.
Right.
With less plot holes, again.
And Star Trek at
Star
the same
Trek
time.
Looks, right.
Star Trek, yeah.
How many lens flares can we have?
I just want less plot holes, you know? Oh, they conveniently...
Well,
the guy was under mind control, but he conveniently left a way for them to get into the machine and stop the vortex in Avengers or with Star Trek. They just happened to drop Captain Kirk on the exact
Trek,
same
though,
place on the same planet they dropped Spock.
Right. Star Trek, though, I give some level of forgiveness because of the fact that that movie was in production at the time of the writer's strike. So the script they had was the script they had to go with. They didn't have any room for editorial changes to any of the scenes that they had. Like, they were written that way. Luckily, it worked. You know, luckily we were able to suspend disbelief long enough to think that Spock could fight off a giant creature with a torch.
Exactly. And you know, I think you... The three of us would probably sit through a four-hour Star Trek movie, but the average public won't. So they have to make it a two-hour movie. So that's where a lot of these plot holes, these convenient plot holes come in, because you have to make the story work in a two-hour period.
But you can write stuff in a way that's smart and still have action. The action can come if the main characters are smart enough to do what they need to do when the time comes and not have some MacGuffin suddenly happen to force them into, you know, like they suddenly trip and fall and, oh, that starts, you know, the next action scene. It's, you don't need that. I mean, like, you look at books like Jim Butcher. He writes the Dresden
Files.
Yeah, the Dresden Files. And everything in there is well planned out. And yes, there's action,
but
you, at no point is Dresden not in charge of what's going on. Or there's stuff he doesn't know at a time. But there's never some point where he knows something and doesn't act on it, and that causes things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need... smarter, right? They need to know the fan base is smarter.
Right.
We are smart. We're going to sit there and go, why did he do that? He just said not to do that, and then he did it, and that started the action scene, but
I guess so. One of the brilliance, I think, of the Dresden Files is he wrote that character in a way where he's always a smart mouth. He's always looking for a fight, basically. He's always got a chip on his shoulder. So
exactly.
You're not surprised when he tells
it's all the bravado
the
that we can't, you know, pull off in our daily lives that we can appreciate, you know, being, you know,
but
working out for someone.
But he still thinks
against
good.
Against all odds.
The good thing about that is when you're reading one of those books as opposed to watching some of these movies is you sit there and when he handles a situation, you're like, oh, he did that. And it worked.
Yeah.
When you're watching these other movies, it's like, oh, he punched something. Okay, you know.
Yeah.
The last Batman movie. Okay, he gives himself a bionic leg. Great. He never kicks anything. If I had a bionic leg, I'd be kicking everything in sight.
Kicks the crap out of everything.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about plot holes? You know, guy takes 7 years off because his girlfriend dies.
Yeah. It's,
and also because he decided to be a scapegoat for something he had nothing to do with.
Yeah,
right. Because
he's the hero they needed, not the hero he wanted to be or something like that.
But yeah, when his original motivation was his parents dying, you would think he'd be more motivated at that point.
Why couldn't the Joker have been the scapegoat for Two-Face? And then he could have kept going on.
Because that
would have
been logical.
Right. Exactly. So,
I mean, the Joker could have been responsible for everything in that movie. He basically was.
Yeah, well, all the people on those two boats at the end, they all knew it was the Joker, not Batman, sitting there saying, right. Go ahead.
It was the Joker that put the gun in Dent's hand in the hospital and told him, like, you know, go and be nuts. And it was like, so he was the blame.
Yeah. Right.
And it still comes down to, like I said, it's a bunch of MacGuffins that keep the plot going no matter what. But you look at the Heishi, the how it should have ended for Batman, and you know that was it. It's just when Joker was on the street and he's saying, "Come on, hit me," and Batman's going at him with the motorcycle in the Heishi, you know, just before he hits, you switch to Batman and Superman and sitting down at the table going and. Superman's like, "You hit him?" And Batman looks at him and says, "Yeah, didn't kill him."
Right.
Well, and there, you know, there you go. That's that would have avoided everything.
But it would have been a much shorter movie.
Well, yes, but that's the intelligence part.
Necessarily, it was a really long movie.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
But that's the intelligence part, you know? Would Joker being the kind of character he is.
Right.
You know, He's usually played, and Bruce Timm does this beautifully. He's played as, he's crazy, but he's also brilliant. And he would not sit there in the middle of his street going, "Come on, hit me," and let that happen.
Right. I mean, the thing is, too, you eliminate that scene. He was very brilliant in that movie with everything he set up.
Oh, yeah. He did some really brilliant things throughout the entire movie.
I think the scene is also pointing to his personality with Batman and the counterpoint where it's like, you know, I'm existing because I want you to come after me.
Right.
You know,
I think in that scene, I think what you're saying there is he would have said that to Batman because he knew Batman wouldn't hit him.
But he would have had a trap or something because he wouldn't have counted on the because like I said, Batman could have just gone right past him, hold an arm out, and clotheslined him, and that would have been the end.
Joker's ultimate motivation is to make Batman lose it.
Yeah.
You know, and to kill. You know, I mean, that's been betrayed so many times in the comic book. So it's like, to me that scene makes sense from that standpoint. Him not actually hitting him. Doesn't make sense, you know.
Yeah, he should have done something.
Right.
Had a, you know, some sort of bolo he could throw at and take him down as he passed him.
Yes.
You know,
he's got everything else in the utility
gadgets and gears. He should have that type of thing on hand.
No, that's very true. I mean, you know, I guess that is one thing they tried to play down a little bit in these movies was, you know, the bat car, the bat credit card, the bat butt.
No. Yes. Yeah. His utility belt was underutilized.
Yes.
Which was okay, you know, and the way they portray the first movie of that trilogy, Batman Returns, everything was based on existing tech.
I mean, Batman Begins.
Batman Begins, yeah. Yes. Batman Returns.
We don't talk about Batman Returns.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, not that one. But everything was based on existing tech.
You have a problem with Danny DeVito?
It was good. Oh,
I have a problem with Christopher Walken being improperly utilized.
Ooh, yeah.
He should have been the Joker.
That would have been maybe. So
Chris, he would have made a good Scarecrow.
Probably, but I couldn't picture his voice as a Scarecrow's voice necessarily. I don't know. I'd have to see it.
I don't know. Well, there you go. There's a question. Who would you cast as your ultimate villain, let's say, for if they were to reboot the Batman movies, which they've already said they're going to,
right?
You know, if you were going to cast, if you were going to say who the villain was in the first Batman movie, and then who would you cast for?
Like, where do you begin? Yeah, where in the rogue gallery do you start?
Yeah.
That's a hard question because you. Ostensibly, I think looking at like Batman Begins as sort of the template to that, it's the storyline, the story arc that they try to draw out there is that, you know, Batman evolves in a world where the mob and mafia control everything, which is similar to, you know, the corrupt versions of our own urban environments, or at least the way they were at the time when Batman came to rise. But then as a result of him existing and and creating a vacuum where the mob was controlling things and now they're not, these rogues arose.
Right.
You know, and costume villainry succeeded, A, because it was filling a void, and B, because it was counter to the costume heroism that was in, that was present. So it's, ostensibly, none of them really would have risen or existed without Batman having been there.
Right. I mean, that's so, a typical argument.
So I guess the trick there is, if you're going to reboot Batman, I think it was mine, you kind of have to start, like, who would be a villain that isn't so, you know, that doesn't have so much costume or, you know, flair around them? Who is the most grounded person that you could put it, you know, put into that? Or at least the most closely rooted to that original mafia arrangement of things.
Well, they tried to do that in Batman Begins with Ra's. Huh? See, what do you pronounce it? Ra's al Ghul. I've heard Ra's. I've heard, you know. Yeah. But they, yeah.
But yeah, Ra's al Ghul was part of a long-standing, you know, secret league of like a shadow mafia type group already.
Right.
So it made sense to introduce him. Scarecrow was just a psychologist, you know, helping out the mafia in their endeavors.
Who was also psycho.
And,
right. And they got away with the mask in that one because it was after I shoot you with this.
Right.
This
helps,
gas.
It helps incite the fear effect even more concentrated. Like if it wasn't the fear toxin enough, here I'm going to show you something really scary on top of that.
Right.
So it was effective. It was practical. It made sense.
Yeah.
But a lot of the, I mean, you could do some sort of, like, they tried to do that with the original Batman movie, the one with Michael Keaton, where Joker's origin was tied to Batman's early endeavors.
Right.
So Batman sort of created
the Joker. Right.
Through his efforts. Which I think is something that could work and could make sense. It doesn't have to be the Joker necessarily, but there are other characters that you could have that direct tie to.
Well, I personally would go with Mr. Freeze. Yeah. And the reason being, if you watched the Bruce Timm series,
right, yes,
the way they played Mr. Freeze was a tragic character.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he was trying to bring his wife back from a permanent cryo freeze, and you know, and he lost his body to the process that gave him the power he had. So it just it was actually, you know, it wasn't just a costume character.
Right.
He had a reason for this.
He had a legitimate handicap that he created in himself by accident that required him to you know, create this suit to preserve himself. And then, yeah, he legitimately went in the direction of a life of crime in order to support the scientific endeavors he needed to save his wife.
Yeah. And
that way it makes sense logically. Yeah. You can get away with having a mask or a costume right away.
And it wasn't malicious.
It's functional.
Too.
It's got utility to it beyond just the visual effect.
And his criminal endeavors were, it wasn't malicious. It wasn't like, hey, well, I've got cold powers, I'll be a criminal now. It was
he was
literally backed into a corner where he had no other way
He needed to fund his research. Yep. He needed materials. You know, such as giant diamonds.
I'm picturing Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Unfortunately, that image does come into play.
And it's so funny because
so wrong.
Yes, they found, like, Bruce Timm created that version of Mr. Freeze, and that became canon at that point. And then they kind of copy that storyline in the Batman and Robin movie, but play it so over the top and so campy. They ruined
over the top.
Have you ever seen how much that movie resembles Circus du Soleil?
Cirque du Soleil.
I mean, really? Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the colors,
they did
the
it on everything.
Yeah. It was gods. Oy.
Well, the previous one was about as audacious and bright. Yeah. You know, was that Batman Forever?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that Schumacher wanted it to be over the top. I mean, he was obviously a fan of the '60s.
No,
sure, but I mean, you're coming straight out of Batman Returns, which was very dark and gothic, but started to trend into that sort of costumey, you know, stuff with the Penguin and with Catwoman. But he took a very strong turn by making, you know, with Riddler and Two-Face being, you know, so bright and vivid.
Oh, yeah.
And having this giant tower of villainy that they operated from.
Which is definitely that, 60s.
That movie made me lose a lot of respect for Tommy Lee Jones. It was just like...
Yeah, that character was flat. Despite being a character whose whole goal was to have a dual personality, he barely had one.
Mm. Right, and it also felt like there were so many scenes where he was competing with Jack Nicholson's Joker in ways, like...
Yeah.
And it was like, you're just not going to do it, so find a different way to play this character.
It's the Highlander effect. Every bad guy is crazy, you know, with the tongue out the mouth and the, you know, the it's just every bad guy, unless you have really good intelligent writers, every bad guy just becomes another version of the Gorga.
Yeah.
But I mean, Two-Face doesn't have to be crazy. Two-Face is a mobster, essentially. He was a DA that sort of fell into the world he was fighting against. You know, he became that which he fought against, but also was conflicted about it. And so, you know, he played that line of chance, you know, in everything that he did.
And that was played very well in the...
By what's his name? In the most recent... In Batman, Dark Knight.
Yeah, Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah, I mean...
That was played very well.
It's funny, because, like, every good characterization of him in the comic books... Neither of his person, he definitely has two personalities, but neither one is like crazy, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're one is, you know, still Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
And the other is, you know, the opposite.
Right.
So to speak.
Yeah. So. In fact, you know, did you guys ever read The Long Halloween?
No, I haven't.
That was the archetype for the movies. What was the second Batman movie?
Dark Knight.
Yeah, The Dark Knight. A lot of it was based on that. But Jeff Loeb, I can't remember the artist on it, but Jeff Loeb was the writer. And it's just, you know, it's a really well done story, you know, and Two-Face is one of the main villains in it. And it's like, you know, I guess what's one of the things too, like writers have to realize, if you're going to want to put Joker and Two-Face in a story together, you can't have them competing for craziness, you know, and writers of the comics get that,
right?
You know,
well, that's the other problem with these movies, the Spider-Man movies, the Batman movies. Oh, we have to have like three enemies. It's like, no, all you have to do is it's like Dungeons and Dragons. Kobolds are easy to kill, but if you get a really smart kobold, he'll take out an entire party. It's the same thing. It's the same thing with these movies. All you need is one intelligent enemy, and they will play havoc with Batman or Superman's entire world.
Yeah,
I think
you don't need to pile them up. Oh, look, you know, that one's not enough. Let's, you know, get the shovel out. Let's throw a couple more.
Yeah, and I think part of the difficulty, you brought up Spider-Man, and I think that they definitely fell into that trope of stacking on the on the villains.
Poor Venom.
But I think
poor Sandman.
But I think part of the problem was that. So they felt the need in every single movie to introduce new villains because they always got killed off or something by the end of the movie.
Right.
And so the problem is, you know, in the comics, these villains are around forever.
Mm.
So they you know, you get past their origin, you get to their status quo, which involves them, you know, in their criminal endeavors, but they have henchmen. And they have – so that they're – you know, Spider-Man can have it out with like Doc Ock, for instance, and have it be have more depth to it by Doc Ock having other guys that, you know, are working for him and who can and other machines that Doc Ock has made to as his defenses and things like that, so that like you have that build up to that final battle. And I think that's what they're trying to have, that build up to some sort of epic battle in these movies. And the only way they can think to do it is by having multiple villains. And there are other ways to go about that. They actually had something to that effect in the movie The Amazing Spider-Man, but it didn't make it in the final cut. Where, you know how the lizard was releasing that gas?
Right.
There was supposed to be scenes where there were, like, you know, people converted to, like, these lizard people that Spider-Man would have to fight.
Okay.
Leading up to getting to the tower. Like, right. Before he got to that final fight with the lizard himself.
Right. And they kind of, it's funny because they kind of
did that in the game.
In the video game, yes.
In the video games. But it ended up getting taken out of the movie.
Okay. It probably explains why they put it in the video game.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, no, and it's right, because if you look at the, like, the archetype to the cartoon, the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon, mm-hmm. it's like you have Norman Osborn and Otto Octavius Doc Ock works for him.
Yes.
You know, and you could have a movie with and do it that way.
Right, and there's depth there. And you don't, like, we as the audience know who Norman Osborn is, and we know that he's got Osborn, or he's got Octavius working for him.
Right.
But they keep that information from Spider-Man as long as possible in that comic right. series, in that cartoon series. And I find that it makes it more interesting, because you have this, you know, this two-faced presentation for Norman Osborn, that he's mm-hmm. like this, you know, innocent businessman who keeps getting caught in the crossfire of these attacks and these events, you know, by this disgruntled ex-employee when in reality, you know, he's orchestrating all this stuff.
You know, that's true too. Look, if you look at it this way, where it's like in Spider-Man 3, because they piled on so many villains in that movie and destroyed Spider-Man's origin, mm-hmm. which they had yeah. done fairly well in the first one, you missed out on the relationship between Peter and Harry becoming the second Green Goblin. It's like, you know, yeah. you could have just had a whole movie based on that relationship and then them battling.
But they tried to have other layers to it. And, right. And I think it polluted things too much. Because they tried to do that story and the Venom story.
And Sandman.
Which everybody all keeps forgetting.
And it's just,
was Sandman in that
movie? Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
And also, you know, make it that Sandman was the one that actually killed his uncle in the first place. Which I thought was cheating.
Right, but and it looks like they're setting that up already now for Amazing Spider-Man 2, because you have Electro, who I think is going to be the main villain, and then there's rumors about Rhino being in it.
I've heard that too. We'll see how they pull it off. My belief or understanding to some degree is they are trying to expound upon what they've set up. And I think it parallels some of the things that they've done in the Ultimate Universe, as well as in other comics and, mm-hmm. and games and cartoons, in that what makes the lizard is the formulation that also is somewhat responsible for Spider-Man becoming Spider-Man.
Right.
And in a lot of the Ultimate Universe of Marvel, that's also true for that, and it also leads to a lot of other things, like the creation of the Rhino and the creation of all these other animal-themed characters that seem to be so prevalent in Spider-Man's life.
It's like DC's Big Bang that created a Static Shock and all the Bang Babies.
So I think that if they're going to tie that together, then I think there's some sensible aspect to that. If basically Osborn is taking this technology that's obviously caused all this cataclysm with the lizard, but it, you know, in his mind, it's just because it wasn't well controlled, because this rogue scientist was allowed to run along and do this on his own. Now that they understand it better, let's focus it and weaponize it so we can use it for the military, you know, or whatever, right. like that.
That always ends well. Yeah.
And in the process,
doesn't it?
You know, create these, you know, new Spider-Man villains that he'll have to fight against, and in the form of the Rhino and, you know, things like that. If they do it well, if the story is well developed, I'm kind of okay with it, as long as they don't overdo it. But we'll see what they do.
Well, right. I mean, one of my complaints, I think, with the original trilogy was that he has such a large rogues gallery that every Spider-Man fan would be fine with just have him fight the guy at the beginning of the movie, capture him, mm-hmm. take him off to jail, and then you don't see him for the rest
right.
of the movie.
Why can't there be off-screen stories? Why can't there have been time passed, these other rogues arose, and, you know, you can open up to him having to deal with this guy and, like, You could open with Spider-Man fighting and taking down the Rhino,
right,
and having him being hauled off to jail, and then move on.
Yeah.
And now we're into the new story.
Yeah.
In the Raimi trilogy, they did have Doc Connors in that.
They did.
But they never got to it.
Right. They never
Which is
kind of
funny
because
Doc Connors is, the main in Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man. So
yeah,
it's like maybe they had the script for that ready for the next one and they just...
I definitely get the feeling that's where the ideas came from, because all the rumors was Spider-Man 4 was going to be the Lizard.
Was going to be the Lizard.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that I got the impression that the people more directly involved in the original Spider-Man trilogy were avoiding the more animalistic type rogues, trying to stick to people who have human faces as far as the villains gallery.
Yeah.
So while they kept building for that, having Doc Connors recur as a character, I think the director and writer involved were resistant to capitalizing on it, because it basically took the humanity away from the character.
Yeah, that's something that
the new people don't seem to get.
Yeah, that's something I totally do not agree with.
I don't agree with it either.
In movies, because you've ever noticed, like, one of the reasons Tobey Maguire takes his mask off so many times in those movies
is so you can see his emotional states.
So you can see his emotional states, his face,
right,
blah, blah, blah. But that can be shown through music, through his dialogue,
yeah,
through body language. Like,
well, that's,
yeah, look at the
I
Power Rangers.
The
they can do everything
have,
with body language.
Right.
Exactly.
Tobey Maguire didn't have nearly enough as much dialogue as Spider-Man should have.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely.
Like, he didn't have nearly enough of the witty banter that,
right,
yeah,
that we've come to expect from Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Spider-Man never shuts up.
No.
He's Deadpool in that respect.
Well, and the thing is, I have the Spider-Man encyclopedia, Marvel's encyclopedia at home, and there's a section in the beginning where it's supposed to be an introduction by him, and he's like explaining his fighting technique, and that's part of his fighting technique.
He keeps them all on their toes, keeps
exactly
them focused on him, so they're not doing peripheral damage to other, to citizens and whatever. Focus on him so he can keep the fight with him,
right,
but also distract them so he can do whatever he needs to do to take him down.
Right. Get them more angry so they're off their game. They're throwing wild punches. He can dodge it, makes them tired, and he wins the fight.
Yeah. Right.
But, yeah, they took that away, and it was like, okay.
Yeah.
What did he have, 3 funny lines in all 3 films put together?
One per film.
Yeah.
Plus, by the end of the 3rd film, somebody would have blabbed who he was.
People saw him unmasked. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Like an entire train car full of people in the second one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, which, I mean, I will still state that that was probably one of the greatest fight scenes in a superhero movie ever.
Yes. No, that was good.
You know, but like ending it with him losing his mask and the entire city of New York seeing who he was just was like, maybe you missed the boat there.
Right.
Have you guys seen the images online of Electro?
With the blue.
I have.
It's funny because he's like wearing a hoodie, Jamie Foxx, and it's down to his eyes, but you can see underneath like he's got all blue makeup.
Right. So it is actually somewhat reminiscent of Mr. Freeze.
Huh, Jamie Foxx is Mr. Freeze. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
It seems like they're definitely going for the ultimate version of Electro.
Right, the blue,
made out of electricity.
Made of electricity version of Electro.
Which,
not the, green costume with yellow lightning bolts sticking off of it.
Yeah, I don't really think that would work in a live-action movie.
Although, have you ever seen the Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon series from a couple years back?
Yes. It was a computer animated one?
Not the computer animated one. There was another one prior to that, which I think had Neil Patrick Harris did the voice of Spider-Man.
Yeah, that was on MTV.
Well, there was that one. It was a traditional cartoon.
That was a younger
version, like high school age.
And
they did have Electro as a character in that. And they somehow made the green and yellow costume work. Because the way it worked out in that one, Max Dillon was like an electrical technician that was helping out in Doc Connor's lab.
Okay.
And, you know, with this, like, weird electric heel tank thing. And
of course.
And something went wrong. And
there's always has to be an electric heel tank right in the room.
And something went wrong with the setup, and he got, you know, pumped full of electricity and was in the hospital, and they had this whole, like, insulating suit that he was in to just keep him, because he was just giving off electricity. And it was green.
Right.
With goggles and everything. And, like, but then he started, like, feeling a hunger for the energy and would start absorbing it from things. And, you know, when he took off his mask, it was just a glow of, like, electric yellow fire almost.
Right.
You know, coming from his head. So
I have seen those images before.
It wasn't, right. So it wasn't a literal, you know, yellow lightning bolt mask like the original comics, but it was... They paid homage to it.
Right, right. And I mean, Stanley's always has always said that, you know, when they originally created these characters, it was all about being colorful and appealing to the eye,
right,
you know, in the comic books. Right, it makes sense. But then when you go to translate him into real life, it's like, yeah, that looks stupid.
Yeah. Right. It's not very well
grounded. Not only stupid, sometimes, some of these costumes, I mean, they get in the way. I mean.
Seriously. Well, right.
Yeah.
I mean, does it make sense, you know, for any superhero to have a cape? You know, I think the only one, like, they made it work in the Batman movies because it becomes a Goliath.
It was functional, yes.
It was functional. Yeah. But
and it was Kevlar coated, so.
Right. Does Superman need a cape? Like, no.
No.
You know, I think in the.
Well, it's part of his custom.
Well, Superman's the only one it did.
Kryptonian custom.
Superman's the only one it wouldn't really matter. But.
Right. I mean, if you look in the original. 40s version of Superman, I think there is hints to that when he leaps tall buildings, remember, because he couldn't originally fly.
Right.
Jump really high, that it would slow down his descent, you know. Does that make, make sense for him to still have one? Not really.
In the words of one great American icon, no capes.
Yes. No capes?
No capes.
Oh, wait. Was from
Incredibles.
The Incredibles. Yes.
Explain why Edna capes don't make sense.
They did a great exposition on capes. That was awesome.
Oh, yeah. That was...
Which made complete and utter sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, if you're not Superman and you're flying near a jet, you're going down.
Right.
That's just it.
Right.
You know?
Oh, man.
Yeah. Unless you are both have the power of flight and are completely impervious, then a cape is a bad idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I've always liked about Marvel. The majority of their characters don't have capes.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, yeah, it makes sense. Like, what do you need a cape for?
There's a couple cloaks in there, but no capes, really.
Yeah, well, to bring it back to, like, Dungeons and Dragons again, one of the worst things in Dungeons and Dragons you can do is, oh yes, I am a big warrior with flowing golden locks, when I'm DMing a game, it's like, all right, you know, I'll come up at him with an ogre, and the guy like, okay, I go to swing, okay, the ogre grabs your hair and plants your face into the rock on the ground, you know, it's like. The cape's exactly the same thing.
Right.
All they are is a tool for the bad guy to just grab and go crazy with them.
Right.
You know?
Cape's bad. I think we're all in agreement.
Even the best NHL player will tell you the first thing he'll do is grab that, pull it over the guy's face, and just start wailing.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Right.
It's perfect.
You see very few professional athletes with long flowing hair.
Yeah.
Which actually brings another point, too. You said NHL, but NFL, you know, one of the biggest things in the NFL is people grabbing face masks, right?
Yeah.
And pulling on the face mask to stop them. They've never having people grabbing Batman's cowl.
Yeah. Would you think that would be
one of the first things
target.
People would, but you're in a close fight with him.
Right.
He would grab
pull off his mask.
Yeah.
So
we'll have to look into that one.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing it back to the Superman movie.
Superman? What?
Yeah, remember way back when we started this discussion?
Did we have to stick to that? All right, continue.
Yeah, just bringing it back. That's all. I'm just saying. Go ahead.
I think he's trying to wrap it up.
No, I think.
I don't know.
You know, he's got a farm to go home to.
Yeah, horses. Yeah.
And I think we should all try to maybe plan to go see it together, and then we could review it.
Okay, that would be awesome.
I'd be up for that.
Yeah.
I'm not dressing up.
Oh, wait. I was picturing you to be Lois.
Yeah, wait,
you to be Lex, and I to be Superman, right? Doesn't that how it works, right? Mm. Oh, wait.
Well, I do have a nice set of pumps in the... Never mind.
You heard their gender bending Jimmy Olsen.
Oh, for crying out loud.
No.
It's Jenny Olsen.
Well, if they better find a reason for it, because the character of Jimmy Olsen lost its need, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's like...
What? Well, it was a character from the 40s and 50s where it was like... Well, it was
the state of the publishing industry at the time. It fits the model of how reporting was done back then.
Yeah. Well, it was also, you know, it's like Robin the Boy Hostage. I mean, it's just, you know, how are you going to get the Superman? Well, here, Jimmy hangs out with him.
He was a convenient target. Exactly. Yeah. He was a convenient target.
Yes.
Because he happened to be on, you know, with Lois Lane as a photographer on the scene, you know, and I'm sure they'll somehow work a little bit of that into the movie. But yeah, I'd read somewhere they have a woman cast for that role.
Gotcha.
And I think, honestly, my guess is that the primary motivation there is to have more women in the movie.
Right. No, that's...
Because, honestly, it's a lot of male characters.
Yeah,
it's very male-dominated.
Comic books in general
So...
Very male-oriented.
Right.
But, you know,
look
at most of the comic book fans. I mean, you know... There's no women in this room at the moment, and there's a reason for that.
Well, if they wrote more intelligent movies, they might have more women, you know?
Yes, instead of just big boobs and strong.
Yeah, the big, you know, it's just, there's no reason for half of that. You know?
Yes. You know, I actually got
into an argument. Don't get me started on Power Girl.
I actually got, well, yeah, that keyhole would not work as soon as she takes flight.
Do you know the guy who originally created Power Girl? When he drew the first, I think it's like 6 or 7 issues, in each issue he makes her boobs bigger and bigger. And he did it intentionally to see if the editors at DC would notice. And by the time he got to the 7th or 8th issue, the editor was finally like, these are getting bigger, aren't they? And he was like, yeah. And there was like, yeah, you better cut back on that. You know, I think it's getting a little ridiculous.
Yeah,
so
go down to like 2 Laura Croft.
So you know but I think it's definitely then it's a definite statement on, you know, how females are treated in comic books.
Yeah, but the canon on that is there were like several reasons why she had. There was an article on Cracked about it, about all the different reasons that she had the big cutout in the front, and you know, it's just it was.
They got rid of it.
No,
so
there's no need.
But
for
were
that.
They? There's no. Yeah, there's no good reason for that to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for her to, you know, be in battle with other people, that's an easy target.
Yes.
Yeah.
A hand will go in there very quickly.
or you know,
especially if she's fighting John.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or going back to the Cracked article, you know, for like Supergirl, okay, she's got a skirt. How many people are on the ground when she's flying over? Or
I assume.
I mean, come on.
It's sort of a skirt. So I think she's kind of covered there.
But still, it's, you know, if you're going to be fighting superpowered things,
right,
dress appropriately.
There was actually an article I read recently on some site where they had some, you know, fan artists had done up all these more practical versions of costumes for a number of DC characters. And I actually got involved in the conversation thread with that because there was a couple.
You got involved in a conversation
online? It
happens. Online?
It's crazy.
No way.
And like they had a version of Wonder Woman, and she was wearing what looked like khakis with part of her costume. And I'm all for the practical. I have no problem with the practical, you know, design, especially since I have a daughter who's into comics.
Right.
I would like her to be able to look at comics and not get body image issues just by reading comics.
Yeah.
Because she likes the genre, and I appreciate that, and I hope that she can continue to enjoy it. So I appreciate the effort that someone put into this. Like, they had Zatanna in a completely, like, a more traditional magician's garb type outfit with actual pants. And,
instead
you know,
of magician's helper with the
fishnets.
The fishnet stocking.
But I got involved in the conversation sort of arguing that I think that there's some... In some areas, I think they overdid it. Like, for instance... You know, I think that it makes sense for Wonder Woman to have, you know, some level of armor to the costume that she has, to make it practical. But khakis aren't practical. I think
khakis
are overkill. And someone, you know, thought I was saying, oh, well, let's put them all back in spandex. I'm like, well, yes and no. I mean, you look at what athletes wear. You know, like real athletes who are like, you look at triathletes,
right?
For instance. you know, the kind of, you look up gear for being a triathlete, the kind of, mm-hmm. you know, sportswear designed for that, it's skin hugging, you know, type of, you know, that are, you know, wicking, you know, to wick away sweat, to move with your body, to stretch and right. be pliable so that you can move freely, so that you're not restricted by your clothes.
Yes.
So to a degree, skin, you know, form-fitting clothes make sense functionally.
Yeah.
But painted on clothing doesn't make sense.
No, right.
You know, clothing
right.
that looks like they literally walked through a bucket of paint and went to work is overkill. You know, I have never seen...
I have to rethink my outfit for tomorrow then.
I would say so.
I'm not coming in tomorrow. Did I mention that?
Like, I've just, you know, personally, I have, you know, I've seen people wear spandex and I have never seen spandex that actually cinches in between women's boobs.
No.
It doesn't naturally do that. Mm. It just doesn't happen. And yet that's how they're drawn.
Right.
And I think it's overkill. It's sensationalized for the teenage, you know, readers that they expect are reading these comics.
And wasn't there like a controversy just a little bit back where the new Wonder Woman had a jacket or something and they got
fans
went crazy?
Off. Yeah. And it goes both ways. Like, there's controversy at that end with that. I've also heard, you know, complaints from, like, the Saturn Girl, I want to say. One of the Teen Titan type characters.
Okay.
She was Legion.
Yeah. So there's different levels of depiction. Like, there's a younger version that's very, you know, more kid-friendly and, mm-hmm. and relatable. But then they also have her represented in, like, the, you know, the more... you know, adult-oriented, you know, titles where she's essentially wearing a bikini,
right?
You know, and most of the time, and there were I've read articles like someone who had a daughter who was into comics and loved this character, but then like so when she saw this depiction, she showed her daughter's like, "What do you think of this?" It's like, well, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit who she is,
right?
Well,
you know, thinking of the way that she is in the more kid-oriented comics,
yeah.
It doesn't fit the character that girl had built.
It's
her mind.
It's not practical.
It doesn't make sense.
Well, then then you've got the complete and utter bad, like they did with Starfire in the Teen Titans, where the new version of her is basically free love 60s girl.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, wears literally nothing.
Yeah, I think that might be the character I was thinking of.
And she was a strong character. Yeah. I mean, fish out of water character, which was fun because it gave you a lot of writing ability.
But that's definitely going too far.
Right, I think that Ms. Martian played that part well in the Young Justice cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That fish out of water type character, at least in the first season.
And yet she still managed to kick ass and put boys in
right.
her place and
exactly.
be a strong female role model. And
yeah.
that was fine, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Well, I think on that note,
I think we've
successfully have talked for over an hour.
We've successfully recorded something.
Yes.
So. Really?
Unless this deletes itself as soon as we hit stop.
Oh God, I hope not.
Have we left any topics for next time?
I'm sure there's plenty.
There's plenty. So I want to just say this before we sign off. Totally unrelated. I'm going to post this before first Saturday in May, which is the 4th, I believe.
Which is when Iron Man 3 is coming out.
Which is when Iron Man 3 is coming out and is Free Comic Book Day. So
nice.
If
well,
you have
I know
kids,
where I'll be that day.
I was about to say, if you have kids and you live near a comic book shop, I highly
which
recommend I going. Anything that gets new readers into comic books so that we continue to have topics to talk about,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm heavily for promoting.
Do you know how many people listening to this right now are saying, why didn't you say that in the beginning?
Because
people are listening.
Are you saying there's that was the payoff and they had to listen to the whole thing to get to the payoff? I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. Right. How astute.
All right. Well.
Anyway. Yeah, I'll be there, and I'll definitely also be seeing Iron Man 3 when that comes out, and hopefully we'll talk about that.
Yes. All right. So there you go.
Cool. We've got
Superman and Iron Man 3.
Yes.
All right. On that. Have a good night, everyone.